position, no matter what azimuth angle you look at it, as long as it's small enough in circumference. One single phase, all angles of observation in azimuth. The crossed V turnstile cannot do that. You'll see a different phase north-south compared to east-west of the horizontal component. Let me think about, and there's vertical component there also. Okay. I'm going to give you elliptical polarization on that, Harry. And elliptical polarization is not bad when it comes to fighting Faraday. You'll get a little bit of QSB phase, but it won't fade out all the way. My first gut feel on that is it'll have elliptical polarization in almost angle of azimuth that you look at it. I guess you're saying that you'd rather build a pair of inverted Vs because they're more broadband compared to the halo. Is that sort of what you're thinking, Harry? Go ahead.
Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta. John with a comment.
They're more broadband, and it's also, I suspect, easier to mount, in, especially inverted Vs, because you don't need so many high mounting points. You only need one high mounting point for the apex. The others are fairly low to the ground. And you don't need supports along the way. It's just one at either end. Whereas with the loop, if you want that big loop that we were talking about earlier, you need many support points all the way around it. And, of course, you don't have that issue with a square low with a whip on top. But that's not as broadbanded.
Yeah, the loop that Howie was talking about, though, was either on 6 meters or 10 meters. It could be done with one point of mounting, as long as he's made it mechanically smart enough. Kilo Bravo 2, Bravo Delta, start over your name, sir, and then your question or comment.
Good evening, Dick. Name is John, Juliet Oscar Hotel, November. Call Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta. First of all, the antenna name you're thinking of or trying to think of is Lindenblad. It's omnidirectional and circularly polarized. Second of all, a minor correction in the discussion of Faraday rotation. I don't know what this is true for sporadic heat, but I do know this is true for S-layer propagation. As you've been stated, you can launch a signal vertical tunnel, and once it propagates the atmosphere, Faraday will cause that wave to begin to spin. However, when it ends up in London or ends up in your buddy's backyard, it's no longer linear, it's still spinning. So, essentially, whether you launch vertical, horizontal, slant 45, or whatever, if you're launching limited polarization, chances are the person on the other end is receiving circular polarization. Now, I don't know if this is true for sporadic E, but I do know KL7, you can't remember his call, Eric Nichols, the jet who wrote the article on UST we were talking about, the goofy foot Yagi. He had an article on eham.net where he built an he built this receiving system. I can't remember the name of the receiving system, where he used a hub antenna, a vertical antenna, orthogonally positioned. He received WZ's carrot. He amplified the signal from each antenna, down converted into a crystal, then up converted back to the original frequency and place those signals on the X and Y axis of a scope, produce the Lissajou pattern, and he can see in real time the rotation of the signal and the fact that what he was receiving was circularly polarized, and the eccentricity of that was almost constantly changing. K2LB in the TechNet from KD2BD.
Very fine, John. Glad you told me about the Lindenblad array. That is an array of four dipoles, each slanted 45 degrees to the ground, all mounted toward a support structure in the common center. You could say that the northern dipole is slanted to the right and the southern dipole is slanted to the left, and same thing on east and west. When you set that up correctly, the Lindenblad array does give you circular polarization in all azimuth directions, done with four dipoles. That's a kind of a cute antenna, a classic. Now, when it comes to the Faraday rotation you get through the ionosphere, I'm a little bit amazed that a linear polarized signal going through the ionosphere, experiencing Faraday rotation, would end up circular polarized. If he told me it had a slight amount of ellipticity to it, I'd accept that. It is not purely linear when it gets out the other end. But to really be circular polarized going through the ionosphere, yes, you're going to see circular polarization. Let me drop. If you're getting two signals simultaneously, multipath, one's getting there by two hops, and one's getting there by three hops, or one's getting there by two hops and some, ground wave, extra ground wave, or extra ducting, two separate signals getting to you, yes, I'm going to give you quasi-circular. But one single path through the ionosphere with Faraday, I previously was led to believe, John, that a linear signal gets to the other end, quasi-linear. And if you have the right kind of polarimetry receiving equipment, you'd be able to measure the amount of horizontal, the vertical, the phase angle between the two, and you'd be able to watch the polarization slowly rotate in time as the ionosphere changes state. But the basic mechanism of Faraday rotation, I wasn't aware, was a basic mechanism of circular polarization. A slight amount of ellipticity ratio, I'm going to accept that. But pure circular, I'm having trouble with that one. Can you give me a better reference on that one, John? Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta, K2RIW.
K2RIW, and a TechNet from KD2BD. I guess we have to define circular polarization. And I think your definition is that it has equal horizontal and vertical components. And that's true. If you build a really polarized antenna, you want to take two Yagis, two linearly polarized antennas, if you want to build a helix, yes, that's generally what your goal is to equal up the horizontal and vertical components. I would certainly consider that circular. That's of eccentricity. And what I'm saying is that, well, if there's 30% vertical, 70% horizontal, I'm still kind of close to that circular because it's real linear. KL7AH or something like that, Eric Nichols, who wrote an article on EHAM, built a polarimeter, and he was able to see this in real time on a scope. I'm a FM frequency measurement enthusiast myself. I have some equipment here where I use to measure very accurately the character of stations like CHU and WWV, and I've been looking at the effects of the ionosphere and also using horizontally polarized antennas and vertically polarized antennas and measuring the carrier, for example, of CHU, and I'm actually seeing a difference in the measured frequency of that carrier depending on whether I'm using a horizontal or vertically polarized antenna. Truly fascinating. And I believe that also has to do with the Faraday rotation. That's my personal theory. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Yeah, Eric Nichols, they have set up a polarimetry receiving antenna. And if he was doing it on UHF frequencies, to make the antenna accurate in horizontal and vertical, and then he's got the right kind of back-end processing, which tells him how much clockwise, how much counterclockwise, and so on, I believe it. When you do it on HF frequencies, and in the near vicinity of your antenna, you've got a spatial wave and you've got a ground bounce wave in the near vicinity of your antenna, the accuracy of your polarimetry antenna starts degrading, I think. So he may have thought he saw circular. Was the real wave getting to his neighborhood circular is something to be questioned a little bit. Also, the way you make circular polarization, you use horizontal and vertical as an example. All you've got to do is have two linear polarization emitting surfaces that are orthogonal to each other is one way of doing it. I could have a slant 45 right dipole, a slant 45 left dipole, feeds them equal power, 90 degrees out of phase, and I'm circular. And there's also direct circular antennas like a helix. But when you do it with horns, with probes in the horns, when you do it with dipoles, you just need two orthogonal things fed equal power, 90 degrees out of phase. Now, there's something called the Poincaré sphere, which I think you're familiar with, which gives you all possible polarization states. It's a method of displaying all possible polarization states. And the azimuth and the latitude and longitude on that sphere tells you what polarization state you've got. The North Pole is clockwise. The South Pole is counterclockwise. The equator is all of the linear polarizations with various tilt angles of the linear. And in between, all your other latitudes are some elliptical wave. If my two orthogonal polarizations are not equal in amplitude, it's called elliptical. And you can talk about the ellipticity ratio. Axial ratio is one of the ways it's described. Most of the antenna people will call it axial ratio. A perfectly circular signal has an axial ratio of 0 dB. A purely linear signal has all horizontal and no vertical, or vice versa, and it's got an axial ratio of infinite dB, the difference between the two, the horizontal and the vertical. So, in general, yeah, if you really want to be exact, everything we're calling circular really has some degree of axial ratio to it. Nothing is perfectly circular, with rare exception. But I think the general characteristic of Faraday rotation of one dominant path through the ionosphere, where the ionosphere is the plasma, the magnetic field combined with that plasma rotates the polarization some small number of times when it goes from New York to London. But a linear polarized signal launched in New York is going to be received in London, I used to think, primarily linear. You may not like the fact that you've launched horizontal and arrived in London vertical, or slant 45 right or slant 45 left. But I think Faraday gives you primarily linear, just that it rotates it. I didn't know that a single dominant path through the ionosphere is capable of making dominant elliptical polarization. I thought it would be more linear. I wonder if you remember seeing a well-documented reference where the ionosphere is stated as making almost circular. I wonder if you've seen any reference like that, John. KD2BD, K2RIW.
K2RIW, and a text from KD2BD. I think there's enough data at any point in time that can say that, okay, well, February 17th at 0300 UTC, there will be pure circularly polarized signal coming from WWB at 5 megahertz. And then maybe at 0310, it'll be mostly horizontal and mostly vertical at some other point in time. It's continuously changing. You also in the past, you've mentioned fades, the causes of fading. I've looked into this a little bit. Fading on HF frequencies are concerned. I've also looked at frequency accuracy, what I can pick up and measure in terms of CHU and WWV at different times of the day, depending on what layer of the ionosphere is doing the propagation. And I could receive CHU, for example, on 3 megahertz during the day, where I believe most of the propagation is occurring in the lower layers of the ionosphere. And this tends to be very stable. I'm able to measure frequency, and it's fairly stable, indicating me, and it's close to where it should be, indicating to me that conditions are fairly stable, and the fading that occurs is slow. It's fairly slow. And I believe that that type of fading is due to changes in the D layer ionization, the loss in the D layer. When evening occurs, you start to get a mixture of propagation modes, and every once in a while you get a quick and deep fade. I've seen that during the times when those quick and deep fades occur, that the signal before the fade and the signal after the fade are 180 degrees out of phase. That to me kind of indicates that there's something going on where there's multipath, where there's the signal is taking two paths to get here, and at that point in time they are perfect in amplitude and just 180 degrees out of phase. And when that condition happens, you get a very brief dip in the signal strength, and then it comes back out of that. But when it comes back out of phase, it's 180 degrees out of phase compared to what it was earlier, what it was before. Also, the Lindenblad antenna, there's lots of information on that antenna in publications such as the AWR Satellite Experimenter's Handbook, because that's an antenna that's frequently used for simple Oscar ground station use. So that's where you might find some information on that. K2R in the TechNet from KD2BD.
Okay. I ought to let you know, John, your signal fades out roughly 10% of the time. Signal strength into this repeater is fading 10% of the time. But I'm listening to you on the input and the output simultaneously, so I'm getting every one of your words. Some of the people listening to them, only the output of the repeater, are hearing those dropouts. And occasionally, you know, whole words every so often get a dropping out. Just so I let you know about that, I'm hearing it all. Where you talked about multipath flipping from two hops to three hops, and you go 180 degrees out of phase between the two when you go through a fade, that's one mechanism of fade. But let me try you on this one. Assume you're using a purely horizontal antenna to listen to WWV. Assume that Faraday rotation is taking a linear signal from Boulder, Colorado, and as that linear signal starts off horizontal in reception at your QTH, you get a beautiful strong signal. As it slowly rotates through vertical polarization, you get a deep null on your horizontal antenna. As it goes from slant 45 degree left through pure vertical, you get a null, to slant 45 right, you will see 180 degrees of phase rotation in the signal you're receiving. So Faraday rotation swishing through vertical on your horizontal antenna would also flip 180 degrees in phase. I wonder if you agree with that one, John. Over to you, John.
K2RW and a TechNet from KD2BD. I absolutely agree. If the signal polarity flips 180 degrees, then I will see 180 degree phase shift in the carat measuring. But that flip is very quick. It's very fast when it occurs. I've also, observation I've made, I've seen cases where I'm measuring the frequency of TH used in Canada's carrier frequency, and I know it's slightly lower frequency. The signal then goes to a fade, comes out of that now higher than its transmitted frequency, and stays at that higher frequency. Another observation I've made, I plotted reception of CHU and reception of WWV and 5 MHz for about, I've made plots of the measured frequency of these stations over a period of about 4 or 5 hours. And the plot that I get, to me, is mind-blowing. I see about it's almost predictable. I get this very jagged-looking, almost sawtooth or sinusoid type of plot with a period of almost exactly 30 minutes. I can't explain that. I've tried to do some research on it. I really didn't find any definitive reasoning as to what would cause that almost predictable 30-minute period in oscillation and just that I'm seeing on these frequencies, on these signals. K2R, a TechNet from KD2BD.
I need to back off his mic. He's going out of the bandpass of the repeater. Tell him to back off his mic, Dick.
Hey, your signal is both weak and maybe you're a little heavily in modulation, and maybe that's why we're hearing those dropouts. I thought it was signal strength on the input, but maybe it is over-modulation, John. As I slant a signal from slant 45 degree left in polarization, and I'm getting positive phase, as the signal slowly swishes through purely vertical, and I get a very deep notch, and then 1 degree to the right in slant polarization, I come back out of the notch, but 180 degrees out of phase. You will see a very rapid shift in phase as you go through the null, with medium rate Faraday rotation swishing. You're also right if you're getting a multipath signal and the two signals are 180 degrees out of phase and equal in amplitude, You'll get a very deep note. As the first path is stronger and the second path is weaker, you'll get an in phase. And as they slowly shift in amplitude, where the first path becomes weaker and the second path becomes stronger, now you flip 180 degrees out of phase. So in either case, a shift in amplitude of multipath or a shift in exact angle of Faraday rotation, in either case you'll go through a very deep null and immediately come back with the opposite polarization, opposite phase. So we've got two phenomena that can give the same observation. And was it a shift of amplitude of multipath, or was it a shift of exact polarization of Faraday rotation? It's going to take a lot more experimenting to find out which will do it, because they will both observationally look the same, I think. And you had another comment that I wanted to address, but I forgot it now. Try backing off on the mic and see if the dropouts go away. KD2BD, K2LIW.
Very good.
W2YY.
From KD2BD. A couple of reasons why my signal is weak is I'm about 47 miles from the repeater. This is a double horizon diffraction dominant path, meaning I've got multiple obstructions in the path, and I'm horizontally polarized, so I'm cross polarized with the repeater. ZL1 Bravo Papa Uniform. ZL1 Bravo Papa Uniform has looked into some effects of the ionosphere. He has a series of very interesting web pages. I think a Google search on his call time will retrieve those pages. He talks about ordinary waves and extraordinary waves, how a signal is split in the ionosphere into extraordinary waves and ordinary waves. Don't ask me any questions about those terms and what they actually represent, because I haven't really read up that much on them, but there's some very fascinating plots on his web pages, and it's just really amazing. The multiplication, what's actually happening up there, we're still learning very much. We don't know anything about it. It's still something that there still needs to be a lot research done. I do this as a hobby, but I still find it extremely fascinating, where I can see signals that are atomically controlled in frequency. Shift in frequency, sometimes with phase, sometimes without phase. I've done tests with vertically polarized loop antenna versus a horizontal dipole, and there are many times where I find much greater fading on the horizontal dipole than I do on the vertical loop. And these are from transmitters that are using vertically polarized antennas. I don't know if that really means very much. K2RIW and the TechNet from KD2BD. I think the last comment was about, the last transmission was about the oscillations and Doppler shift that I see on some of these signals. Okay.
Very fine. Joe recognized. The positive Doppler shift that you see for a period of time could be a path length that is shrinking, because the point that you're getting through the ionosphere is descending, or conversely, the path that you're getting through the ionosphere is ascending, and you're going to see a negative Doppler shift. So the positive and negative Doppler shifts, where your system is so phase sensitive and so Doppler sensitive, because you've got such a humongous reference, just the path length changing will do it. I know that the people who use Loran run into a similar problem. Loran will give you a fairly nice positioning over water, where the system is calibrated, and over land, it gives you quite a bit of error in positioning, because the signal propagates at a different rate over land than it does over water. So you're seeing some of those effects. When I was looking at those very long-range Doppler signals, Chopo signals, on 432 megacycles, when I ran those schedules with K4CAW, let me drop 480 miles away, 10 times beyond my radio horizon. 480 miles, single sideband, 432 megacycles. We saw all kinds of winds and Dopplers and whatever when it comes to aircraft reflections. In your case, I don't think aircraft reflection is dominant. It's much too small a radar cross-section compared to what you're getting off the ionosphere. I think ascending or descending point of inflection in the ionosphere could explain these Doppler shifts that you see that go on for minutes at a time, and maybe even longer than that. That's a guess on my part. Joe wanted to make a comment. W2RYY, K2RYW.
Good evening again there. On my way to home, I was looking between the both channels between Glen Oaks and Selden. And your transmitter in Selden is going negative 0.7 kilohertz to 2 to 2.4 kilohertz in frequency, shifting instantaneously by itself. Just might want to let your technical committee know about that, because I had a little problem copying that transmitter out. It was a little fuzzy sometimes, and I looked at the service monitor, and that's why I see what it's doing.
So you're saying the Selden repeater shifting in frequency. Interesting. You know that John's signal was also fading in and out because he's horizontally polarized to a vertical repeater, and I think he said he's 47 miles away. So he was also fading. I wonder if that was some of the effects that you were seeing there, John. Joe. Okay, anyone else with any further comments? We got a little bit off of the original questioner from the mail that Mel's getting. Anyone any further comments on this before we go to back to Mel's mail? Give me your call letters right now.
KC2QAQ. I was wondering if you had one time for a question for me there, Dick.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, my question right now is that I have an MA5B compact beam, and right now the boom length, it's basically two elements on basically 10 and 20 meters. There's another third element in the center of it that's basically for, like, you know, 12 and 17. But what I'm interested in is, if I right now there's 88 inches of spreading along the boom for the 10 and 20 meter part of the compact beam, and I was wondering if I were to extend that boom from 88 inches out to, let's say, 12 feet or so, going from like 7.5 to, you know, 12, 13 feet, would there be a benefit and gain in doing that?
I don't think it's going to be huge, and you got to be careful now you don't fall into a trap. Back in 1956, there was a set of articles in QST magazine published by, I forget which antenna company in New Jersey, where they were talking all about so-called wide space beams. And everybody reading that article thinks that a wide space beam always has more gain than a narrow space beam. Not necessarily true. A lot of people got that misimpression from that article. Depending on the number of elements you've got in your Yagi-like structure, and depending on how those elements are tuned, in most cases there is a single desired spacing. Now, you can choose a different spacing and a different length of elements and come back to another near optimum in gain, forward gain. But where's the optimum forward gain? If you really are letting everything run free and you're doing a perfectly good modeling program, there is one single length and one single spacing that's going to give you the absolute maximum gain. The difference on the other solutions is relatively small. But you've got an additional problem here. You're not trying to look for maximum gain on a particular frequency. Your particular Yagi-like structure is trying to work on more than one band at once. So, there ain't no yes or no to your question. However, if you get very skilled at neck and mini-neck and whatever, these modeling programs, I think you can find out the answer to what you're looking for fairly fast. And I believe there's a nice section in the ARL antenna book telling you how to use those modeling programs. I wonder if you've already ever delved into those. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Dick, I think you were referring to the Telrex company in Asbury Park in Trio.
You're right, it was Telrex that had that article in 1956 in which everyone reading the article thinks that only wide space beams are going to give you maximum gain. The article led a number of people astray along those lines. There's a number of antennas where you suddenly increase the spacing of the elements and the gain will go down depending on that particular Yagi design. Back to you, Glenn.
Yeah, it was interesting because I've been doing the modeling. And what I found is that if I extended the beam by about from 7 to almost 12 feet and then were to actually lengthen the elements a little bit to modify the band and retune the baron a little bit, I could pick up almost 2 more dB again. Because right now it's rated at 5 dBi, and according to the modeling program, I should be able to get as much as 7 dBi out of it on 10 and 20. That's what I was wondering if that sounds feasible to you or not, KC2QIQ.
7 dBi for how many elements on that one single band?
It's 2 elements, and there's capacitance hats out on the end, and it's got a tuning coil. That's kind of how the beam is set up. So it has an inside length. Basically, on 10 meters, it's trapped, and then you have the coil and the tuning hat for 20.
7 dBi out of 2 elements, I say no way, Jose. Unless something very magic is going on. 7 dBi out of 3 elements as a Yagi, barely doable. Out of 2 elements, under conventional circumstances, I mean, there are some exotic designs where the director is an inch away from the reflector on 10 meters, and if you had infinite conductivity conductors, and if you could impedance match a quarter of an ohm, then yes, you get some super gain. But with realizable materials, that's not a real design. 7 dB of a conventional design over ISO with 2 elements, I say no way, not even close. Now, are you sure it is real gain and not directivity? Directivity, a lot of people fall into that trap and think it's gain. In other words, they measure the 3 dB beam width and calculate gain from that. That is not gain. Because even though you may have a narrow main lobe and it looks like high directivity and you think you've got high gain because you may have significant amount of side lobes and front-to-back ratio and whatever, it may not be that gain at all. So what is a 7 and a fraction dB directivity or real gain? And did MiniNeck or whatever modeling program you use saying you're getting that out of just 2 elements? By the way, when you top hat load and inductively load and whatever, that's just a fancy way of tuning the element. That doesn't change the fact that you've still got one single director there. Over to you, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely, Dick. That's pretty much what's happening. But it does show that there's a detuning effect with these elements with their spacing at 88 inches. And in other words, it almost looks as if, I think you're right, it is directivity, not pure gain. What's also happening is that there's like a detuning effect at like 88 inches. I'm not sure why they came up with 88 in between. I guess there's also some slight detuning with the middle elements in between. That's why I wasn't exactly sure. What's the gain you would actually anticipate with 2 elements on 10 and 20?
I don't have as much experience with 2 elements. I've done years and years of tuning over the last couple of years for a particular client with 3 element Yagis, and I've got patents on that exact subject of what gain and bandwidth you can get out of a 3 element Yagi. So 3 element Yagi, I can tell you gain. 2 elements, it's got to be less than 6.5 dB. I don't know how much less. 6.5 to 7 dB is just barely achievable over ISO of real gain on a 3 element Yagi. My gut feel is that with 2 elements, 3 or 4 dB is closer to your maximum, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, very good. You pretty much answered that one. It's kind of what I was thinking. Another question I've got for you is, this is completely non-related at all, but I know we were talking about polarization before of antennas, and right now, pretty much I'm basically set up with, you know, vertical polarization into repeaters on FM, and when I'm doing my sideband work, I'm generally running multi-elements on horizontal. But years ago, I had tried using a circular polarization beam, basically like a helix type of antenna, and that was homebrew. And when I was pointing it up, basically trying to listen to satellites and that sort of thing, I was trying to do that, and then I kind of lost interest in that, and then I tried pointing it along the horizon horizontally, and the performance I was getting was really poor. I was getting a lot of QSB, especially on the distance stations. Is there any particular reason for that, or maybe just a poor design of or poor application of the circularly polarized antenna?
You ran into the same problem the broadcasters do. Every 10 years or so, there's another enthusiastic group that comes along and says if we can convert our Empire State Building into circular polarization instead of linear polarization, and all the multipath we get in the marble canyons of New York City and out in the hinterlands will disappear, and we'll get less ghosting and less fading and more superior signal. Somebody every 10 or 15 years comes out with another one of those proposals, they run a bunch of tests, and they get very disappointed. When it comes to terrestrial polarization, terrestrial propagation, circular polarization is almost a farce. When it comes to space communication, circular polarization is a beautiful thing. So when you've got one single path from a satellite into your antenna in your backyard, aimed 45 degrees above the horizon, circular polarization is beautiful. That satellite can tumble, and you see no QSB phase. When it comes to terrestrial propagation, where there's almost always multipath, something very nasty happens to CP. The direct signal between you and them, clockwise, goes to them clockwise. The reflection off the ground clockwise becomes counterclockwise. The reason for that is the horizontal component on reflection flips 180 degrees in phase. The vertical component on reflection does not slip 180 degrees in phase. Therefore, the ground bounce signal on one bounce clockwise becomes counterclockwise. Now the guy who is getting essentially equal amplitude of clockwise and counterclockwise at the receiving site, clockwise and counterclockwise, when they combined, if they're equal in amplitude, they always combine to make linear. If that linear happens to end up vertical when his antenna is horizontal, he gets a phase. So just think about that. If you have beautiful horizontal polarization, you transmit to him, he gets two signals, one direct, one indirect through the ground bounce, and he gets a nice signal. You flip over to circular, and all of a sudden he sees nothing. And he says, what the hell's going on?
Repeater, time out.
And whether or not that signal, when clockwise and counterclockwise combine and make purely linear, your next question is, what determines if it ends up to him horizontal, vertical, slant 45 right, slant 45 left? And the answer is only the phase difference, which is propagation path length difference, between the direct and indirect. If I could slowly shift the phase, or let's call it point of origin, slowly shift the path difference between the direct and the indirect, I will watch the linear polarization he receives slowly walk all the way around the clock. That's what I think you were seeing, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, that perfectly explains it, because that's exactly what it looked like. And I wasn't sure if it was just, you know, something screwy with the antenna that I did or whatever. But as I said, I was expecting to get something like a 45-degree performance where, I'd be picking up vertically and horizontally pretty well. And actually what happened was really only strong signals, very strong signals, were coming into the beam very clean and clear. And anything that was off in the distance, it was just tremendous QSB and terrible. That's what I was wondering. When Howie was talking about trying to get an antenna to work for a repeater, wouldn't he be better off just with a 45 performance if he's trying to get a little vertical and a little horizontal? Because I think he said it was for an FM repeater. And in other words, I don't think he was really planning on DXing or big F layer type stuff or things like that. He was just looking for, local repeater use and a good all-around type of 10-meter repeater antenna.
Okay, now, in his case, his mobiles running out there are transmitting pure linear polarization, probably vertical. And you're now asking the question, should he fight for circular polarization on reception? A pure linear polarization launched signal, depending on how it reflects off buildings and whatever, can arrive at him at some crazy linear polarization. You take, for instance, this particular repeater, 2585. When it goes from Glen Oaks and gets into my house in Huntington, and it gets into my bathroom, it always ends up purely horizontal. I don't know why. It's been that way for years. If I want to listen to this repeater in the morning, I take the handy talkie and lay it horizontal on a plastic bench. If I hold the handy talkie vertical, I get deep fades. So this repeater, purely vertical on transmit, ends up horizontal in my bathroom. It is my belief that if my receiving antenna in my bathroom was circular, I would not see a fade. See, where the fading occurs with a circular antenna is if you're launching circular and receiving circular. Yeah, what I was about to say doesn't make sense. You're about to ask me, should Howie make a circular or a linear antenna? Right now, you've created doubt. I ain't sure. Thank you, Glenn.
Dick, lead each way.
Well, either way, Dick, if you're not sure, I know I'm not sure. So, that was kind of the question it left me with, is that, you know, on repeater use and things like that, the only real experience I've ever seen where a circular works is pointing it up, you know, at satellites and things. But, you know, there again, let me pass it back to you and see who gets it next. KZ2QAQ. Thanks again, Dick.
I think Howie's trying to work TX on 10 meters through the repeater via E-skip and F-skip. That's what he's trying to say.
In which case, maybe circular would give him some improvement. I know you wanted to make a comment there, Rich. Go ahead.
Oh, that was it, Dick. I wanted to comment that before to help Howie out because I didn't hear him come back, but that's what I wanted to say. And 2EO.
I think Howie's going to have to run an experiment. Run an experiment of an ordinary linear antenna and a circular antenna and find out which one works better. Right now, I'm not so sure. We were discussing methods by which he could make a circular antenna, and naively, it looked like, hey, any linear polarization he receives, the circular antenna is going to get it without fade, and that sounds good. But the more I think about it, the more I'm not so sure. Circular polarization and terrestrial communication doesn't work out anywhere near as nice as everyone thinks it should. Every time someone runs that experiment, they're quite often disappointed. So, I'm not sure, Howie.
Yeah, but Dick, on this ground wave, this is sky wave, this is skip. Radio is ground wave communication. Go ahead.
Okay. So you're saying ground wave, sky wave. In theory, the so-called ground wave keeps the same polarization that was launched. The sky wave, because of Faraday rotation, can come out any polarization it wants. And now when you mix the two together, are you going to be better off with a circular antenna than a linear antenna? I'm not sure. Over to you, Howie.
Well, how do you get rid of the fade then? If you got a fade that's coming in, you're listening to a station, and he's coming in from Europe on 10 FM, or a station's coming in from California. They can change frequency. They can change cycles. So you're trying to get rid of as much of the fade and the rotation. But I'm just going to give it a try, and we'll find out.
Maybe the best way would be a voting system, Howie. If you had a vertical antenna and a horizontal antenna, and you voted on which one was receiving the best, and you flipped over to that one, now you've got complete polarization adaptability. And that's got to be a hell of a lot better than choosing a pure circular or a pure linear. I know Rich wanted to make a comment. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I was sort of leaning towards the voting system. What I was going to say is, what about dual diversity deception? The military used that for years with for RTTY. Would that help them? I believe that's some type of a comparator and two antennas spaced a quarter wave apart, so when one's fading down, the other's fading up. Does that have any validity, Dick?
Tremendous validity. Whenever you have diversity of any kind, and that can be positional diversity, polarization diversity, frequency diversity, an angle of arrival diversity, if you've got enough gain in the antenna. You choose any one of those four diversities into a voting system. And on each of those, there's two different kinds of voting systems, pre-detection and post-detection combining. And do you just vote for one or the other, or do you do a complete analog slow shift from one to the other, depending on their relative signal strengths. So diversity voting and analog voting, or just digital voting, you combine the right combinations of those, you can get all kinds of improvement in reliability of a fading communication channel. So there are people who put a lifetime of experimenting into diversity systems, and they've got a lot to offer. You add more and more diversity, and eventually all of your fades almost disappear. Anybody have any further comments? Give me a call at us, K2RAW.
G2B.
Something like G2B. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Name G2B, name's Steve. I have a little trouble with the dump machine coming in, so I know about that. I'll come back to it. Just want to make a comment on the 10 years from my previous experience. An inverted V with a 70-degree apex angle will significantly reduce the phase of the polarity shift. Give that one a try. In G2B.
Okay, I think you said you have done 10-meter diversity. Is that what you're saying, Steve? Go ahead.
Yes, that's correct. And I've used the vertical horizontal and the inverted V at the same time, switching back and forth, and you can eliminate a good part of the fading with the inverted V with about a 70-degree apex angle. And it works terrific for sporadic gates. Absolutely incredible. When there's a lot of quick shifting, so instead of getting them to the steep phase, you eliminate. So, give that one a try.
So if I understand you correctly, Steve, by way of your inverted V and some other antenna, you had essentially horizontal polarization or vertical polarization, and when you went into a deep fade in one and you flipped over to the other antenna, a high percentage of the time, the fade went away. Is that essentially what you're saying, Steve?
Yes, I had three antennas set up at the same time with a switch, and I was able to see the fading on the vertical, see the fading on the horizontal, and when I went to the inverted V, I would see it go up and down, but I wouldn't get the deep nulls to lose anything.
Yeah, and in general, an inverted V, when you look at it at some oblique angle midway between broadside and infire, it is a kind of circular polarized antenna. So you had a horizontal, a vertical, and an inverted V. And I think you're saying a good percentage of the time, the inverted V did not get the fade that the horizontal or the vertical got. Is that what I think you're saying, Steve? Go ahead.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. And it was... for sporadic heat propagation, it was outstanding. That's just the comment I wanted to add. Give it a try. And I think whoever wanted to try it on 10 meters, that's what I was using. It's phenomenal on 10 meters. Always kept that one in the arsenal.
Okay. So that inverted V with termination that Mel started off the discussion with tonight, which is a subset of the inverted V that you had such good response with on 10 meters. Sounds like a darn good antenna. We've only got about 3 minutes left, Mel. We didn't get very far into your mailbag, I know. But it isn't what we promised. This was TechNet number 1229. You guys have just spent another 4 hours of your night discussing antennas and polarization. Hopefully we've all learned a little something. And try to be kind to each other, and we'll be back next week. Mel, I'm going to send it back to you. You got 2.5 minutes. K2KEY, K2RAW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yeah, I got a lot of comments I can make on this because I got three antennas that are working on 80 meters and vertical and the original dipole and the loop. And I've made, you know, a number of different observations. And, of course, the experiments I made, you remember, with different angles of a dipole on 30 meters of raising and lowering it. So I have a lot I could tell you, you know, in experience, especially about propagation and the layers and everything, but we'll have to get into that at another time. And something about also you haven't taken into consideration with the verticals called the PBA's radial Brewster angle and a number of other factors that I've come up about, especially way the atmosphere has been behaving in the last couple of years. It's been a little strange, but all right, I'll have to leave that for another time.
73 is all. This is K2KEY.